This is Power for Living, the Bible teaching ministry of Christ the King Church in Wakefield, Massachusetts. I'm your host, Feliciano Segundo, and our teacher is Father Michael Carl. So get out your Bibles and let's get started.
I would ask that you all get out your handout that's in your bulletin to follow along with the sermon today. Now, most of us are generally obsessed with the future. We're worried about it, we're uncertain about it, and many thousands and millions of dollars people throw away every year on fortune tellers and other people who they ask or seek to tell them what's in my future. Well, why do people do that? Well, it's because we don't like the uncertainty of the future, do we? Well, on the other side of the future issue, we're fascinated by what the future may bring. Although you look at some of the movies and most of them talk about a horrible apocalyptic future, things like that, disasters and things. About 15 years ago, though, if you watch any of those TV news documentary shows, like, you know, I don't want to name them here, but you know the ones I'm talking about. They had a story on there talking about the Jetsons cartoon show. And they were speculating and talking about how the Jetsons, that silly cartoon from like the early 1960s, actually predicted some future things that were going to be happening. You remember in the cartoon show, they had treadmills, moving sidewalks. They had video phones. They had all kinds of things. They had robots that were actually servants in the house and do the errands for us. Well, you know, there's a company now that makes vacuum cleaners that vacuum without even being touched. You just turn it on and it goes moving around and all that. We have robots that can bring stuff from the kitchen for us. So the show was about how the Jetsons actually foretold something in the future, strange as it might have been. Then a couple of years ago, Scientific American published an article featuring leading scientists predicting the future. Well, among those things they were talking about were, we'll be actually able to accurately predict earthquakes. We'd be able to find a cure for Alzheimer's disease. We might even find Earth's twin, and they're speculating about whether or not we can actually have people living on Mars. I'm not sure I'd want to do that, but you know, there are people who might. In their future documentary, the BBC said that there's going to be a volcano apocalypse. You know, all of the volcanoes on the Earth are going to erupt all at once, and it's going to wipe everything out. Asteroids were going to destroy the Earth. Another star may wander into our galaxy and rival the sun, and that we are our own enemies, and we'll end up destroying ourselves. Well, the British seem to be far less optimistic about the future than the Americans are, but that's what's going on. But they're trying to predict the future. What does this tell us? Well, the prophetic side of the Jetsons cartoon aside, these features show that we're grasping for straws and trying to figure out what's going to happen to us in the future. And some of those predictions look pretty foolhardy. Well, our passage from James today actually tells us that they are foolhardy, because we're not supposed to be trying to figure out what's going to happen many years in the future. And James tells us why and what we can do about it. So we're going to look now at James chapter 4, verses 11 through 16. Do not speak evil against one another, brothers. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is only one lawgiver and judge. But he who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor? Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little while in time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. James starts out this section by telling us not to speak evil against one another. You know, that's a good bit of advice, of course. But how is it, and here's your first question for response, how is it that we speak evil against one another?
Trying to judge people.
Trying to judge people, that's good. What else?
Makes ourselves feel better.
Well, try to make us feel better, that's true. Anybody have any other ideas? How we speak evil against one another?
You don't know them very well, but you judge them anyway.
Yeah, we might not know them very well, and we're still speculating about who they are and what kind of people they are. Yep, those are good answers. Now, if we look back over the last few weeks of this James series, we have to admit that James has spent a great deal of time in his letter discussing our speech, has he not? He's said to be slow to speak. He's told us to control our tongue. But now he's going for the prize. He tells us not to speak evil of one another. And there are a few ways we can speak evil of one another. And these are all on your handout this week. The first is to gossip. What is gossip? Well, it's unknown, generally very personal, an intimate detail about another person told to others. It may be done with or without the subject's knowledge. That word gossip is used in the New King James Version in 1 Timothy 5:13. So Paul's telling us don't gossip. Don't speak things about other people, especially if we don't know anything about them. Then there's slander, which is telling or repeating a harmful or damaging statement that could harm the reputation or well-being of another person. It's a malicious statement or report. Slander, in this case, is always spoken. The print cousin of slander is libel. And while we're talking about this, let's remember that in cases of libel, whether the story is true or not, is no legal defense, and it's exactly the same in the kingdom of God. Whether the story is true or not is not relevant. Even if the information or story is true, if it's spoken to harm the other person, it's slander. Even if you find out something really juicy about another person that is true, if you go repeating it for the purpose of deliberately attempting to harm or damage that person, that's slander. James here is telling us, don't do that. Then there's slander's other cousin, backbiting. That's talking badly about another person behind their back for the deliberate purpose of harming the other person. Backbiting may also be true. But if you say it for the purpose of tearing down or harming the person, it's backbiting. James also telling us don't do that either. And if that's not enough, there's reviling. We remember that word used in John chapter 9 when the Pharisees were reviling the man born blind whom Jesus had healed. Reviling, that's denouncing another person with abusive language. This is verbal abuse, and it's always done in the presence of the person being criticized. It's doing it to their face. It's being in their face. And this is harmful criticism. It's not offered in the hope of improving the other person, but just being mean-spirited about or towards them. If you say something to somebody deliberately and it is abusive, harmful, or critical unnecessarily, and you're doing it on purpose, it is abusive and just plain mean. And there's no good intent in that. That's reviling. And the final one of these is to curse another person. That is deliberately speaking something harmful about another person's future with an expression of a desire that evil or harm happen to that other person. That's speaking a curse on another person. And we've talked about this so many times. Our words have power. Speaking ill of another person, wishing harm on them in the future, is not only verbal abuse, it equals a curse. That's like saying, woe be unto you. You mean-spirited, foul-spirited person, I hope you get what's coming to you. That's a curse. Not only that, you're putting yourself up as judge of that person, hoping that justice in your eyes be done to them when you have no idea what they've been through. That's a curse. So there are all sorts of ways we can speak evil of people. The last half of that same verse says, the one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. This is pretty strong. You're judging the law. Not only are you speaking evil of another person, we're judging them. When you say something harmful to another person, you are in fact pronouncing judgment on them. When you are backbiting, gossiping, or slandering, you are actually pronouncing judgment on them because you are proclaiming yourself as superior to that other person and believing then that that other person is a lesser person than you. And that's serious stuff. And if that's not enough, not only were we judging them, James says we're judging the law. That's the Mosaic Law. The first five books of the Bible, the Torah, or the Pentateuch, as they call it. And you know what that means? According to James, in that instance, we are putting ourselves in the place of God's law. We realize that. And that's heavy-duty stuff. David constantly wrote about in the Psalms about how awesome God's law is. I will meditate on your law day and night. I just worship you, Lord, for great are your statutes. Your testimonies are marvelous to me. David wrote about that over and over again. Then Paul talked about how the law is actually good. If it hadn't been for the law, I would not know what sin is, Paul said. But now you got to think, if what James says is true, and it is, if we're putting ourselves in the place of the law, we are exalting ourselves to a praiseworthy position that is equal with God. Because God spoke the law, and he meant it. We're putting ourselves in the place of God's holy law, according to James here. We need to think about that. And that's why James is telling us, let not many of you presume to be teachers. You're going to be judged more harshly. No one can tame the tongue. With the tongue, it's like a spark that sets a forest ablaze. Because there are consequences for our actions when we speak ill of another person like that. And James is warning us. Now, at the beginning of today's teaching time, we talked about our human obsession with knowing the future. We talked about our desire to want to know what's going to happen to us. And some of that's normal, of course. There's also the prudent side of preparing for the future. How many commercials do we see on TV talking about how you need to save some money or develop a retirement plan for your future and all that? That's prudent. That's good. But that's not what James is getting at here. There's a downside to this. Look at the things our two media outlets said about the future. Now let's look again at what James says about the desire to know the future. In verse 13, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Let's look at this. Is James being critical here of people who do that? Anybody?
Yes.
What's that?
Yes.
Yes, he is. He's being critical of people who would do that. Is he even giving a warning to people who say such a thing? Mm-hmm. Okay, I heard a yes. That's correct. And this is also in your handout. James is giving a warning to us. Now, next question. Why would he do that? Why would he give us a warning about people who say things like that?
Because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
That's right. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But there's a couple of character attributes that come into play here that are dealing with or that are part of this. And it's because there are two other factors we spoke about at the beginning. And those other two factors are arrogance and self-sufficiency. Now, while arrogance is obviously wrong, it's probably hard for us to figure out why self-sufficiency would be a problem, right? Because we're always told to stand on your own two feet, be independent. You need to be up there supporting yourself. You need to be able to stand on your own two feet. And there's a good side to that. You know, Paul says if you don't work, you shouldn't eat and things like that. But that's why we need to talk about these two things together. And here's a question. How is what James said equal to arrogance or pride? And this is involving that statement in verse 13. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Why is this prideful?
He's trusting himself.
What's that?
He's trusting himself.
Very good. Because if you say something like that, you're actually boasting and you're proclaiming that you are trusting in your own ability to carry this out. You're trusting in your own ability. And whether you realize it or not, you just ruined the last quarter of my sermon. Because what James says is labeled arrogance because we're boasting about all of what we think we're going to accomplish in the time allotted for it. If we say those things, they can be entirely self-focused. Anybody understand that? You're saying it's all about me. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do that. I will do these things. And we notice which pronoun is repeated over and over in those. It's arrogance. So what does the Bible say about pride?
It's not good.
It's not good. Okay, that's so mild it's almost polite, Gary. What does the Bible tell us about pride?
It leads to a fall.
It leads to the fall. Okay, that's one. What's that?
Don't be like that.
And don't be like that. Okay, that's true. Now, Psalm 31, verse 23 says, love the Lord, all you his saints. The Lord preserves the faithful, but abundantly repays the one who acts in pride. God is going to see that justice is done if you act pridefully at any point. Now, there's Proverbs 16:8, which Judy was getting at there. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Usually when you're sticking your neck out or sticking your nose up in the air, you're headed for trouble. One, you're all about yourself, and the Bible tells us not to be that. Then there's Mark 7:21 and 23, where Jesus says, for from within, out of the heart of man come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, a word we just heard a few minutes ago, then pride and foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person. What does it tell us here? That in Jesus' own words, he puts pride in the same sentence with things like sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, covetousness, deceit, lying, sensuality, living by your more baser side, and envy, slander. Because pride is evil. We can be proud of ourselves in a good way, which is we give God the glory, but we're a sense of peace about the accomplishment, but we're also at the same time aware, and we're really pleased that things worked out, but we are aware that God did it through us. Pridefulness says, I did it my way. According to Jesus, pride ranks right down there with all those other sins in that list. So, yep, it's pretty serious, to put it lightly. Then there's self-sufficiency. What is bad about self-sufficiency?
I don't need anything. I can do it myself.
Okay, I don't need anything. I can do it myself.
That's burning your own
bridge. Doesn't it sound like a four-year-old, though? I can do that all by myself. Okay, let me clarify again, and this is in your handout. James is not talking about being responsible. He's not talking about pulling our own weight, and he's not criticizing those who want to exercise sound judgment about their lives. He's talking about those who leave God out of the picture and believe they can handle all of life on their own. He's talking about, and I actually use this word in the sermon, he's talking about the blowhards who are self-proclaimed know-it-alls, who know all the answers, or so they think, and who believe they have it all figured out. Those folks think they did it on their own and don't leave room for the sovereignty of God. And I think I've probably used this story before, but it's a Winston Churchill was speaking with some guy in England back when he was prime minister, and the man boastfully, a serious blowhard, came up and said, I am a self-made man, prime minister. And Churchill looked him straight in the eye and says, thank you, you have relieved God of an amazing burden. Because he's taking himself out of the picture. He's taking God out of the picture completely. That's why this is bad. James comes to the hard reality of life in verse 14. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. James is reminding us here of who we are. We are God's. We're His. He's in charge, and we're not. We're temporary on this earth. Yes, we're the pinnacle of His creation, the only creatures made in His image and who can fellowship with Him. But we're still subject to His power and authority. That may seem simple, but in the everyday life, how many times do we get this confused about our authority over our own lives? And in point of fact, in a way, actually just leave God out of the picture. How many times do we actually do that? This is not meant to be judgmental at all. It's meant as a caution, for we all need to be careful that we don't believe it's all about us or it's all on our own shoulders. And this is now in your handout. In doing this, this self-sufficiency without God, James is urging us to turn control of our lives over to the Lord. He's asking us to get closer to the Lord and to learn the glorious way of life that seeks the Lord's will for our whole lives. James is urging, exhorting us to remove the stress from our shoulders and to put the future of our lives firmly in God's hands. He, God, is more than able to handle anything we can throw at Him. It's a peace-giving, stress-relieving act that James is telling us we ought to do. How? Turning things over to God relieves us of the burden of being judge, jury, and executioner in every situation and over every person in our lives. Saying, if the Lord wills, means we're looking to God. We let God take over, and this opens the door for us to see Him at work. We start looking for evidence of His guiding hand, clearing the way for His perfect solutions to our everyday problems. We even start noticing when He's moving in our lives and in our hearts. We start noticing when He works out a situation or brings the right people into our lives. We see the peace-giving factor here. When we turn it over to Him, He then opens our eyes to see the evidence of Him actually working out a situation, of His hand guiding and leading and directing. And there's freedom in that. You say, God, use me. I'm your hands, and I actually have to do the physical work. But actually, no, it's going to be you. There's freedom in doing that. So if we're going to have a conclusion, the central point of everything today is letting God be God. We break free of having to have our way, of having to be the judge of others, and having to feel like the whole of life is on our shoulders, because it's not. We're free to let God be God and for us to be His humble servants. Amen.
Thank you so much for joining us for this week's edition of Power for Living. If you happen to miss any of our other programs, be sure to go to our podcast page at christthekingnorthshore.podbean.com. And you can also visit our website at www.ctknorthshore.org. If this program has been a blessing, feel free to let us know. Write us at Power for Living, care of Christ the King Church, 4 Railroad Avenue, Suite 309 in Wakefield, Massachusetts, 01880. Or you can also send us an email at christthekingnorthshore@gmail.com. You can be a part of this gospel ministry by becoming a patron of Power for Living. You can find out how by clicking the Become a Patron button at the top of our podcast page. That's it for this week, and until next time, remember that Jesus is your power for living.